Welcome to MPC, Milwaukee's philanthropic community, where we highlight nonprofit leaders and everyday heroes who are making an impact in our community through their purpose, their passion, and their generosity. I'm your host, Jill Economo, and I invite you to join me for a conversation about how our guest is making a difference and learn how you can make a difference as well. How many of you have ever thought, boy, I wish I had learned these things when I was younger. Just think where I could be right now. You can probably think of a number of different scenarios where these things could apply. If you've been around the business world for a while, like I have, you probably have attended leadership classes of some sort. Maybe you're a business owner or you have a C-suite role. Maybe you're a sales manager or the leader of a nonprofit or some other business group. You know how this goes, right? You attend the class and you learn some really great lessons, ideas, and concepts, and you think, man, this is really great stuff. You're so excited to go back to your company or your nonprofit and implement the things that you've learned. And now comes the familiar comment. I wish I had learned these things when I was younger. Just think where I could be right now. My guest today actually took some advice from a client and came up with some programming so that the younger generation could learn some key concepts and ideas from the business world and implement them sooner rather than later. Let's listen to how that turned out for my guest today. Welcome to the show, Chuck Zamora, founder of Zamora Group International. How are you doing today, my friend?
I am very well. Thank you for inviting me in.
You're welcome. Maybe I should say good day, mate. Why is that? Well, you spent 30 years in Australia, initially in a teaching capacity, but then you moved into the corporate world. Tell us that story.
So I was, let me take you right back to the beginning. I was working on my master's degree in education at San Diego State and saw a poster and it said, teach in Australia. And I thought, that's interesting. So I went and they said, we'll pay your way down. We'll give you residency visa. So you will have, you'll be a complete resident. The only thing you won't be able to do is vote and you can work tax-free for 2 years. And so I thought, this sounds very interesting. And I interviewed for the job and was offered it. I went to my parents and I said, I got a teaching job. And they went, oh, great. Where? And I said, Australia. And both of my parents simultaneously said, go. Mm. Now, I don't know why they said it so fast. But it was a great decision, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. I taught school for about 7 years, and then I left the classroom, and I taught teacher for about 3 years. And then I just knew that I didn't want to be a principal. I didn't want to be an inspector. I didn't want to be a superintendent. I didn't want to climb that ladder. And so I left and I joined a company called Dun & Bradstreet. Started out in sales. My first 2 years, I won back-to-back sales contests. So like every other stupid company, they made me a sales manager. And wasn't very good at that in the beginning. I was really good at managing nine-year-olds. I wasn't good at
that's tough.
Managing adults. But I learned how and eventually became a regional vice president with them. And then they offered me the job as the Asia Pacific Regional Training Director, responsible to train all of their staff in Australia, New Zealand, and Hong Kong. It was a massive elevation up the ladder. So I went home to Trish and I said to her, I've been offered this job. And she said, what does it entail? And I said, well, first of all, we'll have to move to Melbourne, which means moving like from DC to Texas. And I'll be away from home about 70% of my working life. And she said, okay, it's your career. It's what you've chosen to do. If we have to move to Melbourne, we move to Melbourne. I'll just get a teaching job down there. But if they think you're that good, and then she looked at me like, I don't think you're that good. But if they think you're that good, why would you do all that for them? Why don't you just set up your own training company? And I quit the next day.
Mm.
And I started writing material and I started finding clients, and that business grew into a nationwide organization that I have literally worked with everybody from Citibank to Subway sandwiches and everything in between. And it has just been an amazing experience. And then 20 years ago, we made the decision to move back to America.
Man, you had a wonderful 30-year
Yep.
Career in Australia, and you continued it here when you moved back. You actually developed a class called Tools of Life and Leadership that you offered to high schools that originally started out as something you developed for the corporate world. We at Ellen Becker actually sponsored a few schools here in the area, so you could offer this great leadership training to some students who might not otherwise have an opportunity to receive it. Tell us how that progression played out.
So that program actually was born out of, it was really interesting. I was working with a lot of companies, both big and small, and I came to this realization that there were leaders that were loved, respected, and revered, and leaders that were tolerated. And so, like, I've got a degree in psychology, and so I set up a research project. And the research project was a juxtaposition between those two. What did these people do that these people didn't do? Right? Why were people walking over broken glass for these people and these people just came to work? Right? You know? And so what I did was I interviewed probably more than 50, less than 100 CEOs or presidents of companies or managing directors or whatever they're called. And I would take them to lunch. I'd take them to breakfast. I'd sit in their office. I'd talk to them. I just want to know what made them tick. Why is everybody in love with you? Why is everybody working like crazy for you? What is it that, you know? And it boiled down to four things. They were great communicators. They had a really good attitude and a healthy self-image. They knew how to set and achieve goals. And they had the courage of their convictions. Hmm. Over the years, and it's been many years now, but over the years, I've had a discussion with many, many, many people about those four that I think are the pillars. People will also then say, well, what about this? Or what about this? Or what about this? And anything else that you can tell me that you think is important is a subset of one of those four. All right. If somebody says, oh, well, what about if they're really good time managers? Pops under goal setting, you know? What if it's this? Well, it pops under that. But those are the four pillars. All right. What I found interesting in my research was that when we talk about attitude and self-image, the great leaders of the world are so humble. It's crazy. Mm. They have a sense of, it's not about them. It's about what they can do for others, you know? And so I started putting all that research together, was completely amazed at just how much information I had. And one day I was having a meeting with the state, I don't know what it was, state district manager or whatever the term is, at Citibank in the state of Queensland where I lived. And I was telling him about all this. And he said, Chuck, we have a plethora across this nation of managers that need to be leaders. He said, take all of that, develop a program, and we will take it across the country. And so I wrote this program, took it across the country for Citibank, but because I'm not stupid, I look like it, but trust me, I'm not. And when I would be in Sydney, Melbourne, Adelaide, Perth, Hobart, wherever I happen to be with them, I would contact other clients and work with them. So I was running this program for lots and lots of people, and it was working. And I was in Perth on the western coast. I was on like the 26th floor of some building. We had finished the day. It all went well. I had like 20 managers from Citibank. And I'm packing up and everybody leaves to go home, right? It's 5 o'clock. And this lady hangs back. And I sometimes get that where they want to talk to me. And I'm packing up and she's standing there and we're having a bit of a chit chat. And then she looked at me. I will never forget this, Jill. She pointed her finger at me and she said, you need to be doing this with kids. And like, was like, have you ever had those moments when you know God's talking to you?
That's what tapping you on the shoulder.
Yeah. It was one of those God moments. So I took that course and I converted it into a program called the Tools of Life and Leadership for high school kids. And I will tell you with a great deal of pride, between the work I've done in Australia, New Zealand, and now in America, I have worked with over 90,000 high school kids. Mm. And in Australia, there are schools that I ran that program every year on an annual basis. I ran that program at some schools for like 15 years consecutively.
Wow.
As a matter of fact, we would finish the program. We'd be on a leadership camp and we'd finish the program. And one of the teachers who was heading the whole thing up would come to me and go, Now, get your diary out because we got a book next year.
That's so, a good problem to have.
Yeah. It was great. So I worked with lots and lots of kids. And then you alluded to in your intro about class. And I've worked with a lot of Christian schools. I've worked with a lot of Lutheran schools, a lot of Catholic schools, and non-denominational schools, right? But I never focused on them. It was literally just going in and running the tools of life and leadership. And then I had this vision that I really needed to focus some of my attention on working with kids in Christian schools. And so we've developed a program called CLASS. It stands for Christian Leadership and Success Strategy. And what I've done is I've just taken the material. I'll give you a good example. I think leader, whether you're a senior in high school or you're running a corporation, if you're the leader, not only do you probably have a bit of a vision, you should be a visionary, you know? And in a secular school, we lay that out. In a Christian school, what I get to do is I get to tell them that in Proverbs, it says, without vision, the people perish. And what I say to kids is, did you notice it doesn't say they stumble? It doesn't say they fell down. It doesn't say that they skipped a beat. It says they died. Like, vision is like really, really important in the life of a leader. And we need to be educating kids about having a vision for their own life and for the club or the group or the team that they're in. Vision is really, really critical to the leadership role. And so what we've been able to do in that is just add some flavor to what it's about, you know?
Absolutely. And I've actually sat in on these Tools of Life and Leadership classes, and I just love seeing the faces of these kids when they get it.
Yep.
You know, when you have a way of communicating with kids that is really impactful, I think. You do
Thank
such
you.
A nice job with that. Well, something, unfortunately, a tragedy happened in your family, Chuck, that changed the trajectory of your life personally and professionally. We're going to take a quick commercial break, but when we come back, Chuck is going to share with us what that was. So stay tuned.
You're listening to MPC, brought to you by Allen Becker Investment Group. At EIG, we are committed to education. That's why we host seminars throughout the year covering topics like Medicare, estate planning, real estate investing, caregiving, personal finance, and more. And the best part? They're open to everyone. Curious about what's coming up? Visit allenbecker.com/events and join us. We'd love to see you there.
Welcome back to MPC, Milwaukee's Philanthropic Community. I'm your host, Jill Economo, and I'm visiting today with Chuck Zamora from Zamora Group International. He joined me in the studio today. We talked a lot about a lot of things in the first segment, Chuck. We learned a lot about your professional life, that you lived and worked in Australia for 30 years, and then you moved back and you continued the impact you're making here in the States. But then something tragic happened, a life-altering tragedy that took place in your family last year. Would you be so kind to just share with our audience what happened?
So, it's not easy.
Yeah, I know.
On the 9th of November, 2024, Corey, my son, who has Down syndrome, he lived with us. And he and I, 2 or 3 days a week, would shower together. And one day, that day, we were showering, and he had 2 red stripes right here on his shoulder and a group of little red dots. I didn't know what it was. Got him dry, took him out to Trish and said, have a look at this. And she looked at it and looked at it. It didn't look like a scratch, didn't look like a rash. And she looked at it and looked at it, and she said, we better watch that. But she didn't panic. And if she doesn't panic, I don't panic. Okay? 2 days later, it's a Saturday, we're having a shower again. And the stripes they're still there. The dots are still there, but the little dots are now on his right side shoulder. I took him back out to Trish, and she said, get him dressed right now. I'm taking him to urgent care. We didn't know what this is. Got him dressed. We went to urgent care. The doctor took one look at his shoulders and said, you need to go to the ER right now and get a blood test. Now, I didn't hear this part of the conversation, but Trish said, what are we looking for? And he said, a platelet count, and she knew. I didn't hear that. So we get to urgent care, and they do the blood test. Shankar and I are sitting in that stupid little room with the curtain, all right? And this doctor walks in. He was a young doctor. I know he was young because he had a man bun.
Okay.
And he just stood there and looked at us, and he said, "Your son's got leukemia." What? He went to work yesterday. And he said, "We're recommending that we transfer him immediately to Frederick." We said, "Okay." And Trish said, "Okay, so when we get there, like where do we go?" And he said, "Oh, no, no, he's going by ambulance." And they put him in an ambulance. Trish went with him. I went home and got some stuff, you know, and met up with him. Because Corey had Down syndrome, and because he was diagnosed with what's B-cell ALL, which is very common in kids with Down syndrome, very common in males, and very common in Hispanics. Okay? Corey is a male Hispanic Down syndrome person. So he hit the trifecta. And because it's very common in children, this particular strain of leukemia, they said, "We're going to recommend that we transfer him to Children's if they'll accept him." Well, they accepted him. And so Corey went, and for the next 11 months, he was in an isolated ward. It was called the HOT unit, hematology, oncology, and transplants.
Okay.
And he couldn't even go to the elevator. Corey did not go outside that unit for 11 months.
Wow.
It was awful. He was allowed to have 5 visitors. So he had me, Trish, his sister, and then Mr. Minkin, who lives next door, and his wife. Mr. Minkin is like a second father to Corey. After 11 months, things were going really well, and they sent him home. He was home, and it was now going to be a 12-month maintenance program where a nurse would come to the house, give him some chemo, not as heavy a dosage. And then every second week, he would have to go into clinic and just check his numbers, just to make sure that everything was going along pretty well. Everything was going along pretty well. Corey had 3 part-time jobs, by the way. So he worked at Ace Hardware 2 days a week. He worked at Goodwill 2 days a week. And on Wednesdays, he went to the Port Washington Police Department and washed all the squad cars. Okay. Mm-hmm. And he thought he was a cop. He was back to 2 of his jobs, and one day I heard him up really early in the morning, which is not like him. So I got up to see what was going on, and he was in the bathroom, and he was shaking, and he said he didn't feel well. So I went to Trish. I said, Corey says he's not feeling well. She said, "Take his temperature. We have to take his temperature. If it's over 100.5, we have to take him straight to Children's ER." Well, it was 101. So we took him to the ER, and he ended up in the ICU. I'll be honest with you, Jill, it's so much a blur. I don't know how long he was there, but he was in the ICU. He had theoretically beaten cancer, and my son passed away from COVID. His immune system was so compromised from all the chemo that he just didn't have the immunities to battle with COVID, and it took his life.
I've known you for many years.
Yep.
And have heard the story of Corey and how close you guys were. And I know how devastating it's been for you. He was your buddy.
Never called me dad.
Yeah.
He always called me buddy. We held hands everywhere we went. If we went to a Brewer game, we held hands. If we went shopping to the grocery store, we held hands. As soon as we got out of the car, he would just hold my hand. And you know, it's really interesting how blessed I was to think that I had a son who was 32 years old that wanted to walk around town holding my hand.
Yeah.
You know? Mm. But it never bothered him. He never thought, you know, I shouldn't be holding your hand. He just held my hand because that's what we did.
Yeah.
And he never called me dad. He called me buddy.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll share something with you, Jill, and I don't know if I shared this with you before. Maybe I have. But a couple of years ago, maybe 3, 4, he and I were in the kitchen and we were talking about God. And somehow in our conversation, we started talking about eternity. And so I wasn't sure if he knew what it was. And I said, "Hey, buddy, what's eternity?" And he looked at me like, "Are you so stupid?" Seriously, he just looked at me like, "How would you not know that, you know?" And he looked at me and he said, "Buddy, it's forever." And I went, "Perfect."
Yeah.
That is exactly it. I could not have said it any better. It was the perfect definition.
Mm-hmm.
And then the school teacher in me says to him, "Let me tell you something, buddy." And I said, "In the next 20 years, there's a very good chance that I will die because all humans die." And then decades and decades and decades later, you're going to die because all humans die. And he got really glassy-eyed. He didn't quite cry, but his eyes just teared up and he just stood there and he looked at me. I'll never forget this moment. I know right where he was standing. I know right where I was sitting. We were in the kitchen. I can still see it today. And he just looked at me and he went, "No." And I said, "What do you mean, no?" And he said, "Buddy, I have to die first because I couldn't live without you."
I met Corey. He's fantastic young man. He's funny. Everybody loved him.
Charming.
Charming. That's a great word to describe him. Absolutely. It's such a powerful message of the bond that you two had, and it's beautiful. Has your message changed much since the passing of Corey last year?
Well, I've thought a lot about that, Jill. I think it's really important that the message of being a royal flush, that you've got all the tools, you got all the cards. You're so lucky that you and I, we got all the cards, all right? Corey didn't get all the cards. And that was kind of my message in schools, was that how dare you waste that perfect hand that you've been dealt? You have an obligation, you have a right and a privilege to go out and do great things because you've been given all the cards. That was my message. Today, that message stays the same, except now there's another piece, and that is you don't know when that hand is going to get folded. You don't know when your last day is, and you can't afford to waste any of these days, you know? And the message is make sure that you make every day count. My son, even though he only lived 32 years, trust me, he made every day count. Mm-hmm. My son traveled through Europe with us. He grew up in Australia. He grew up in America. He wrestled in high school. He went to prom. He went to homecoming. He did the polar plunge and raised $3,000 for Special Olympics. He jumped out of an airplane. Okay? This kid led a life. He was an example of, he wasn't going to ever let one little extra chromosome stop him from doing great things. But I also want kids to understand that we don't know when God calls us home. And what a shame if you wasted your time that you have here because you thought you had all the time in the world.
Right, right.
You know, that to me is a big lesson that I will have to share with as many as I can, as I work with kids, you know?
Yeah.
Use your time wisely.
Yeah. I know that you are in the process of becoming a nonprofit. You kind of told me before that you're just taking your time on that because this tragedy that happened has some days just left you not wanting to do much. And I guess that's understandable. And we don't have a lot of time left, but I want the audience to understand that Chuck does a lot of these things, these classes that he's talking about in the nonprofit world, to churches, to schools, secular and non-secular as well. I've been through the classes. They're awesome. If you're interested in having Chuck come in and speak, he's a great storyteller. We'll give you some information in a little bit on how to reach out to him. But I wanted to close our time together, Chuck, by just sharing the fact that you write a quote of the week email that goes out to hundreds of people each week. And recently your quote was, "Integrity does not require volume to be heard," where you go on to talk about integrity being something that you do even if you know no one will find out. And you go on to say that integrity shows itself in the quiet, humble, soft, and gentle moments of your life. And I love that. I think it speaks so well to who you are and how you mentor and teach others. If you could close our time together with a quote, what would that be and why?
I wrote this, and I'll share it with the audience. It says, "Dignity is not found in your bank account, the clothes you wear, the car you drive, or the position that you hold. It's found in who you are." My son was a young man of great dignity. He loved everybody, and everybody loved him.
Yeah.
And Corey was known, let me just quickly tell you, at his celebration of life service, 500 people turned up.
So awesome.
Yeah. And that was a testimony to him.
Yeah. Who he was.
To who he was.
Yeah.
In the Best Buddies program that we have in high schools and colleges, his best buddy, her name's Lizzie Hurdle, amazing young lady. She said it best. And she said, Corey sprinkles love and joy everywhere he goes.
Mm. And that is such a beautiful example of who he was. And this time together, I am so thankful that I've gotten to know you over these years and to learn your story and to see how you make an impact on everybody, whether it's children, adults, anybody that you cross paths with. I believe, too, you sprinkle that joy, that love and joy out there as well. Chuck has written a couple books that are waiting to be published where he tells Corey's story. He mentioned to me that he just has not been able to write the final chapter on Corey's story just yet. But when it's ready, I'm sure you're going to want to check it out. If a school or youth group or a church or anybody else out there is interested in class, Christian Leadership and Success Strategies, or any other seminar that you offer, Chuck, what's the best way for them to connect with you?
I would tell them just, if they just go to my website, Chuck, C-H-U-C-K, Zamora, Z-A-M-O-R-A, it'll take you to my website. In closing this out, as we're setting up this nonprofit, all right, that is going to support Children's Hospital, it's going to support the work we do in Christian schools. We realized that it needed to have a name. And after discussions with this board of directors that we've put together, it was unanimous that it had to be called Corey's Hugs.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Because he was known for his hugs.
Yes. Oh, listeners, you got to be aware of that. Just, you know, when the time is right, it'll happen and it'll be wonderful. I have no doubt about that. Thank you for being here today,
pleasure,
Chuck, and sharing how you're making a difference for our next generation in all the ways that you do. I really appreciate it. Stay tuned next week to hear how another wonderful organization is making a difference and learn how you can make a difference as well. And always remember, whether you're at home, at work, or out in the community, find a way to be a blessing and give a blessing. Have a great day.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Milwaukee's Philanthropic Community, brought to you by Ellen Becker Investment Group. If something in today's conversation resonated with you, share it with a friend or family member. And if you haven't already, subscribe so you never miss an episode. At Ellen Becker Investment Group, we believe education and community impact go hand in hand. That's why we love bringing you thoughtful insights from leaders and organizations who care deeply about making a difference in Milwaukee and beyond.
Please note, this podcast is intended for general informational purposes and to highlight philanthropic efforts in our community. The opinions and missions expressed on MPC do not necessarily reflect the opinions of Ellen Becker Investment Group employees and leaders. For more resources, visit ellenbecker.com. We'll see you next time.